Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I'm just like a lot of you. I've been watching this Last Dance Jordan documentary on ESPN. Admittedly, I'm not as big of an NBA fan as I used to be, but I grew up loving the NBA, especially during this era. This is really my era, the 80s turning into the 90s, kind of a golden age of the NBA. And so many people of my age watching this documentary that's been on ESPN on Sunday nights, I think one of the things that's made it such a popular, successful venture is the fact that for some of us, it's like the perfect dose of nostalgia, and the fact there are no other sports going on kind of helps there as well. In fact, it's been really kind of fun to see. Maybe you're watching it, maybe you're not, but certainly a lot of Americans are, to the tune of millions. It's kind of a fun reminder of just how great things can be when we seem to all be kind of paying attention to the same thing. Typically, that's a game. There are no games right now. So this Last Dance documentary along with the NFL draft last week is about as close as we're getting. And one of the things on the most recent episode, or at least one of the episodes from this past Sunday, reminded me a lot of college football, and I wanted to take a moment to mention this. So there's the moment in which Jordan and the Bulls finally beat the Detroit Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals after the Pistons had kind of not just beaten the Bulls, but beaten them up in previous years. Detroit had won two straight NBA championships. But finally, they were vanquished by Jordan and the Bulls. And if you watched the documentary, or if you just remember this from being alive, upon losing to the Bulls, the Pistons chose to leave the floor a few seconds early and did not shake Michael or any of the other Chicago players' hands. And really, that became a very important kind of focal point in the personal rivalry that existed between Michael Jordan and Isaiah Thomas. Jordan does not like Isaiah Thomas, and Thomas ended up not being a part of the 92 Dream Team, which was very noticeable at the time, and it was still a very hot topic during the documentary this past Sunday. And I guess as I'm watching this, what I'm left with is just how old-fashioned it seems that Detroit could have done something back then that was kind of not the best sportsmanship and feel no pressure to apologize for that whatsoever. You know, if you watch Thomas during the documentary on Sunday, essentially sort of shrugged off the notion that the Pistons were wrong for doing that. He says, now, given the aftermath of it all these years later, maybe he regrets doing it. But at the time, he was like, hey, this is just kind of the way we felt like expressing ourselves. The Boston Celtics had done this to us in previous years. Bill Laimbeer, I believe, has gone even farther. That was the Pistons center during that time. He's essentially said, why should I care what anybody thinks about me? Now, we know in modern times, social media has kind of made everybody kind of care about everything, and everybody's apologizing for everything all the time. But back in the sort of post-social media era, the Pistons felt no obligation to apologize for their actions in any form or fashion. And all these years later, Michael Jordan, who's not influenced seemingly by social media, holding a grudge apparently against Isaiah Thomas all the way to this day, he doesn't feel any notion of obligation to apologize for the fact that he didn't like Isaiah because of this and apparently used this as fuel for his career. He held a grudge and doesn't see anything wrong with that. And no matter how you feel about any of that kind of stuff, I guess it's kind of refreshing to think that these guys, players, Thomas and Jordan, can be rivals against each other and be kind of okay with that. The teams themselves can not like each other very much and kind of be okay with that. There's nothing wrong with admitting that someone's a personal rival to you. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, we want to vanquish this foe. We're not going to treat them like our friends. We're going to treat them differently than that. It reminds you of big-time college football because I think that you see that in this sport as well. And I think it's one of the reasons why, frankly, college football is such a popular sport. Not the most popular sport in the country. That's the NFL. But college football has become quite popular just underneath the NFL. And I think one of the things that makes college football so popular is the prevalence of what you saw between Jordan and Thomas going back this past weekend. Unapologetic in viewing a rival as a nemesis, a foe to be vanquished, and not some sort of friend that you go around having dinner with or buddy-buddy palling around with when you're not in the throes of competition. Because after all, a phrase that gets used sometimes is, hey, it's not personal, it's just business. It's not personal, it's business. the fact of the matter is, what could be more personal for the average person than his business? And for someone like Kirby Smart, his business is college football. He wants to remain employed. He wants to remain at the top of the college football heap. There aren't enough elite players to go around. He wants to make sure that he gets more than his fair share. That way he can remain competitive with the very top programs in college football. And when someone stands in the way of that, I think Kirby Smart could be rightly expected to treat that person much the same way that Michael Jordan treated Isaiah Thomas. You don't have to have a lot of nasty animosity, but viewing that person as a nemesis probably makes some sense. And as I've said on this show many times, one of the really good things about Kirby Smart that Georgia fans ought to enjoy, even though Smart doesn't publicly talk a lot about his rivals, certainly seems to enjoy beating up on Florida and Auburn and even Georgia Tech for that matter. He seems to really have an appreciation for, as a Georgia grad, what it means to beat these historic rivals. And he seems to understand how much Georgia fans have a good time and enjoy it when Kirby Smart delivers those big kind of trophy wins against the teams that Georgia fans hate most. But sometimes rivalries extend beyond just who you compete against on the field. Right now, Georgia and Clemson aren't competing against each other on the field very much at all. They'll play each other scheduled to this 2021 season opener. They may even meet in this year's college football playoff. But for now, what Georgia and Clemson have isn't so much a rivalry on the field. It may be again soon. It's just not right now. But it is very much a rivalry in recruiting. And when you're battling against a recruiting rival, I think doing what you need to do to win that rivalry, to put a stigma around the program that you're competing against, frankly, I think all is fair when it comes to those kinds of things. Which takes us to Paul Feinbaum's show on Friday, in which Kirby Smart made an appearance. And boy, you know, it feels really fun to be so busy that we're just now getting around to something that was said on Friday. But I think this is worth spending some time with off the top of our program. Feinbaum asks Kirby about how the draft works as a recruiting pitch for an SEC program such as his. Georgia had great success in the draft. The league itself had tremendous success in this year's draft. And Kirby Smart said, yeah, it does help, but people still apparently try to use it against you. Here is what Kirby told Feinbaum.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great sales piece. What gets me, Paul, is you probably would believe it, but you wouldn't believe what some coaches outside our conference tell kids. You know, they'll sell to a kid. It's better to not go to the SEC because it's too tough. It's too competitive. It's too physical. You might get beat up. You might get banged up. You might not have as good a career there that you will somewhere else. Well, that's not the way the NFL GMs are looking at it, and that's not the way the NFL coaches are looking at it. They want to take kids that want to compete at the highest level, that want to go play in those big-time matchups, and that's what the kids want. They want to go play in the biggest games and the biggest places, and that's what they aspire to do. So for a coach in maybe another conference to sell that, hey, it might be a little easier path to come over here and go this way, it just speaks volumes. You want kids to be able to see through that.
It is fair to point out that Kirby Smart does not mention anyone by name. Notably, he doesn't mention Dabo Swinney. I mentioned Swinney before, and Kirby Smart, I think, is pretty clever about stuff like this. I think Smart knows how people like me interpret those words. This seems to be a bit of a subtweet, if you will, of Dabo Swinney, because when it comes to programs outside the SEC who have things a little easier, where the competition's not quite as tough, Clemson certainly comes to mind in that regard more so than anybody else that Smart might have possibly been mentioning. It's also fair to point out that Feinbaum, the guy that Kirby's speaking to there, made an appearance on WJOX, the radio station in Birmingham this week, and he himself said that he thought Kirby was referencing Dabo Swinney with that comment, although admittedly Feinbaum says that he doesn't know that for sure. That's just his opinion. It's my opinion as well. I'm guessing it's probably your opinion too. And you know what? When it comes to recruiting rivalries, much the same way Michael Jordan once disliked Isaiah Thomas and used everything he had to his advantage to beat him, I think Kirby Smart's absolutely right to treat Dabo Swinney this way as well. We know that Swinney's got a little bit of sensitivity when it comes to the schedule that Clemson plays. I've said a million times that Clemson's obviously an elite program, but there is no denying that it's an elite program that benefits from an easy schedule. And Clemson talent getting a chance to to beat up on inferior foes Saturday in, Saturday out. I think painting that as a negative thing and painting the rigor of the SEC as a positive, I think that's pretty smart for Kirby. Because first of all, there is a certain brand of alpha male player that's just going to prefer the SEC because it's the toughest possible environment that you can be in. And kind of suggesting that Clemson's sort of a little beta by comparison because you're playing against lesser teams, lesser competition, that's not going to work as a negative for every recruit, but it is going to work for some. And stigmatizing Clemson in this little bit of a way until you have a chance to play them on the field and take them down a peg on your own, I think it's probably pretty smart from Kirby Smart. It's sort of an old school throwback to the way that sports used to view its rivals. And I don't think there's anything wrong with Kirby Smart doing that right there. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and we are really glad to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today. Of course, on video, as always, at 10 on Facebook and YouTube for right now. We'll look forward to being back on Twitter again very soon. Radio on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Always fun to be there at noon. And, of course, as a podcast, no matter how you find them, Spotify, Apple, Google, whatever else, glad to have you with us. Really appreciate our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia for making it possible. And let's face it, you know, there are a couple of issues that Engineered Solutions of Georgia is really, really good at finding you a solution for. A foundation issue, something that impacts the structural integrity of your home, a waterproofing issue. You know, water always finds a way. If there's a way into your home for water, water will find it. My gosh, as you know, think of all the damage that water is able to do when it's left untreated, untended to. It can be a disaster, but Engineered Solutions of Georgia can help fix that for you. They got two full-time engineers on staff. They do great work. They're also proud partners of UGA, which makes it fun to do business with them. They're great friends of ours here at Dog Nation Daily as well, and they're quite easy to get in touch with. Simply dial 678-ESOG now. That's right. You can dial 678-ESOG now, and that'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. I've got a really good conversation coming up with Jeff Sintel in a moment. We'll get into what Kirby seemed to be saying about Dabo Swinney. We'll get into what the NFL draft says about how Georgia's work is going in terms of its on-field product and its recruiting and what it still needs to do. We'll do a lot of that with Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a moment. One of the things I want to point out before we get there is a piece that's up at DogNation.com for me. Yes, they occasionally let me write a little bit. I can barely read, but sometimes they'll still let me write. And I wrote something at DogNation.com this morning about one of the things that I think is underrated about Smart's first 4 years at Georgia. And goodness knows, you know, when you're talking about this product every single day, the product being Georgia football, you have a tendency to nitpick, whether it be, you know, the national championship, we still want to see Georgia win, the improvements to the offense, we still want to see Georgia make. We don't apologize for speaking about those things, but there are more than just the little blemishes to speak about. Sometimes you want to talk about some of the hidden positives that maybe don't get as much attention as they should. And one of the things for Georgia that I think that is undeniably true and yet not always noticed is the success the Bulldogs have enjoyed with taking less known recruits, three-star type recruits, and putting him in the NFL's draft picks. Most notably, probably a year ago, when DeAndre Baker left school as the Thorpe Award winner, became a first-round pick of the New York Giants, after having been a player that Jeremy Pruitt once said had zero offers when Georgia first gave him some attention and then was developed by Kirby Smart after that. You look at this year's draft. Tay Crowder selected with the final pick by the New York Giants. Solomon Kinley selected in the fourth round by the Miami Dolphins. These are three-star players that played above that level during their time at Georgia. Next year's draft, you may even see more of these type of guys. Eric Stokes from the 2017 class, somewhat of an unsung member of that class who's really found a home at Georgia. If Jordan Davis chooses to leave after his junior season, selfishly I hope he doesn't, but if he does, he's kind of in that group there as a wow. If someone like, say, Justin Schaefer were to emerge as a starter along the offensive line, he could also go and get drafted. So you may have even more three-star players from Georgia's roster drafted after next season, and it's the kind of thing that you ought to feel pretty good about. I mean, ultimately, Smart is most famous for the four- and five-star players that he's brought in, and by after next season, there won't really be a lot of three-star players left in the program of any stripe. But for now, there are some, and some that are here have been greatly developed by while they're at UGA, and that's, by the way, before you even get to any of the transfers who've kind of come in and found a much more substantial home with the Dogs than you otherwise would have seen. So from that standpoint, Kirby's not just an acquirer of talent. He's also been a developer of talent there as well. When you're looking at his overall profile as a coach, I definitely think that's something you should pay attention to. It's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Later on, very interesting war of words between Florida and Tennessee of sorts. We'll get into that. You're going to like this, especially if you're a Gator hater. But for now, for more on the draft, Georgia recruiting, and everything else, let's get ready to talk to Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Jeff Sintel, let me bring you in on this. First of all, thanks for being here. A lot of draft stuff I want to get into, but I do want to begin with this going back to Friday. What did you make of Kirby acknowledging that, or maybe, you know, some of the SEC programs, recruiting against programs, I'm going to suggest this is Clemson. Kirby wasn't clear who he was talking about, but these programs that have a chance to sell easier schedules, you know, maybe, you know, easier opportunity to dominate, that somehow behind the scenes, those programs might be trying to use that to their advantage when recruiting against Georgia, when recruiting against the SEC. What did you make of that?
Yeah, it's obviously a frustration point a little bit there with the Georgia staff. And anytime you see Kirby's smart voice, even just a trickle of that, in my mind's eye, it means that there's a lot more he could say. But he's just going to give you that little top sliver of the icing of what's going on there. I mean, it's no secret, Brandon. You hear a lot of things on the trail. Georgia and Clemson have been going at it for years. They go after the same players. They're going to go after the same players in this case. Clemson has a lot of bells and whistles to tout in its program, and it's not a member of the SEC. It's, I think, a team that has only averaged about one loss per season over the last five or six seasons. And, you know, to me, Brandon, that just makes me want to shake my head. Because a lot of the elite prospects I'm around that I talk to, they're not looking for easy. They're looking for something that's going to be hard. They're looking for every practice day that's going to be hard because that's going to make them better.
I want to be very honest with you about this. I think what Kirby Smart said on Friday is really smart because my assumption is it is about Clemson, even though he doesn't say them by name. And I think Smart is also, pardon the phrase here, smart enough to know that people like me will take this to mean Clemson. He sort of has seen the way that people like me do our jobs for years. He knows how to throw some red meat into the water when it comes to something like that. But for Georgia, who, as you said before, is sort of fighting this battle right now solely in recruiting against Clemson on the field, they'll play each other's schedule in 2021, and who knows if they may even play in this year's postseason. But on the field, they're scheduled for 2021. Prior to that, they're battling and recruiting all the time. I think anything that you can do to stigmatize Clemson is probably fair game. Because let's face it, Clemson does have a lot it can sell for itself beyond just the fact that it plays an easier schedule. But we know the easy schedule is a little bit of a touchy subject for Dabo because he has kind of been drawn off sides about that topic by the media many times. So if Kirby can poke that stick a little bit in the side, if Kirby can add the stigma of, well, Clemson's a good program, but my gosh, that schedule they're playing, soft competition. Are you really ready for the NFL if that's all you're playing each and every Saturday? I think anything that Kirby can do to stigmatize that is more fun for college football and the sort of emerging rivalry between these two programs. And also, it's just probably a little bit of a savvy move to kind of plant that seed in people's head of, oh, Clemson's the soft program that plays the soft schedule. The soft guy is the ones who ultimately go there.
Well, Brandon, I think a lot of this, you know, first of all, you don't need to be Carmen Sandiego to kind of figure out where the negative recruiting would be coming from. Who is a recruiting rival to Georgia right now? A true eye-to-eye rival that is not in the SEC. You got Ohio State. You got Clemson. Mm-hmm. You got to start stretching the imaginative. Maybe you got Oregon. Maybe you got Oregon as you go forward. This is funny, Brandon, because – some of this I think about the college football season is like attrition. And if you're not going against great dudes week in and week out, you're not getting pummeled. Your body's not getting hammered down and whittled down. Let's face it. When everybody got to the SEC championship game in the SEC, all those Georgia LSU players were probably operating at 85-90% because that's what a grind of Alabama, Auburn, Florida, LSU, you throw in Kentucky, you throw in South Carolina, you throw in Tennessee. That's what it does to a player. But sometimes I look at it from an NFL general manager's perspective, the same way I would look at high school guys, and I go, wow, Johnny Five Star looks great here. Who are they playing? Is this guy any good? is this a good program? Is this a, because everybody's going to have good tape against somebody that's going to be changing tires in 3 years. But like when you look at, you look at some, and no offense to the tire changers out there, sure appreciate you guys and the good work that you do. But when you see a guy that's sitting there and you're like, okay, how good is this guy on the other side of the ball? Is this a guy that's going to play on Sundays? Sometimes you have to wonder, even when you're evaluating from Saturday to Sunday and not just Friday to Saturday, you're kind of evaluating now, can he do this against somebody really good? And I think, Brandon, the draft, you know how we say the film in the eye doesn't lie? Well, the NFL eye in the sky doesn't lie either. Because yeah, you look at the numbers, and I think, what was that, 64 from the SEC? I think it was 46 or 45 from the Big Ten. And then it was 27 draft picks from the ACC. And I think 10 of them came from Clemson. So you don't need to be a Johnny scientist to look at that data and figure out that one program is not being as battle-tested on week to week as other programs are in the country.
Speaking of the NFL draft, I want to talk about that from a Georgia perspective for a moment, something that I think is really good and then something I want to see some improvement from Georgia as we head into future years, upcoming season, maybe most crucial on that. Let me start with the good. I've got a column up at dognation.com right now that I think you'll agree with. I think one of the interesting hallmarks of the Kirby Smart era thus far is the success that he's had with, you know, less heralded recruits, three-star guys who've gone on to be draft picks. There are a couple of those this year with Solomon Kinley and Tay Crowder. Solomon Kinley talked about that with us, his pride in being a three-star recruit when he joined us on our Cover 4 video last Thursday. Obviously, the 2018 draft featured DeAndre Baker, and that may be the highest achievement of all of this because Baker's arguably the best defensive back in Georgia history as a guy that once told Jeremy Pruitt he had zero offers when Georgia first extended scholarship offer to him. The 2021 draft may even have more of these three-star type guys. If Jordan Davis decides to leave, Eric Stokes has the potential of being that. Justin Schaefer, if he earns a starting spot. You know, certainly Georgia offensive linemen have been drafted aplenty in recent years. When you look at one of the things that Kirby Smart has done really well through 4 years, I don't think this gets enough attention. As a player developer, Smart has developed some of the non-four and five-star guys and really turn them into some of the best players in the entire program. And that's before you even get to transfers and junior college guys and other names like that that you could potentially add to the fold.
Yeah, you look at 2021, Brandon, and it's not just those three stars in the NFL draft picks. I look at the medium tier four star, the lower tier four star that becomes a monster in the Southeastern Conference. I think Azeez Ojulari is one of the brightest. Gosh, when that guy gets to a combine setting or gets tested and scouts get to look at him and how fast, yeah, and chiseled and smart and how really good he played. Folks got to remember, Adam Anderson was rated higher than him in that class. Brenton Cox was rated higher than him in that class. Robert Beal was rated higher than him a couple years ago. These guys were all stout, All-American types. And
good point.
Azeez Ojulari comes into Georgia after, on the heels of a crippling knee injury his senior year at Brennan, it was really clear from the jump. Once Azeez got the green light, and then what he did last year, he was clearly an upper echelon guy in the SEC already, especially for the Georgia. You're going to see a lot. You're going to see a lot more of that when you see a guy like Stokes. I always liked DeAndre Baker because he was a guy I thought that you don't see a lot of Georgia guys play both off man coverage and man coverage, and DeAndre Baker could do everything he wanted to. He's a guy. Even when I look at guys on Georgia's roster, I think a guy like DJ Daniel doesn't get enough praise and appreciation. That's another junior college guy that comes into Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, even the kind souls and sharp eyes on your program will sit there and say, Eric Stokes, yeah. Tyson Campbell, yeah. I'm telling you folks, DJ Daniel, what he can do and how he's developed in Georgia, not just being fast and physical and pressing at the line, but being fluid and shadowing receivers. Those shorter guys, I'm talking about the guys like the Mecole Hardmans of the world, the Jermaine Burtons of the world, the Dominic Blaylocks, the Justin Jeffersons of the world. I mean, that's a player right there that's developed quite nicely in Georgia's system. And we start talking about the 2021 and draft and Bulldogs, I think DJ Daniel to me looks like a first or second round pick.
I want to talk more about that topic, what I want to see more of from Georgia here in a moment. Before that, let me remind you that, you know, one of the ways that you can show pride in the University of Georgia right now, and I mean beyond the football team, is to step up and support the work being done by the UGA Alumni Association. This is the time of year we think about giving to the UGA Alumni Association anyway, and now those gifts made toward the university, the alma mater that you hold so dear, those gifts have never been more important than they are right now because they impact the university in a number of ways. First of all, let me talk to you about the student emergency fund here for a moment. You know, for a lot of Georgia students who find themselves not able to live on campus right now, they sort of step back into a home situation that in a lot of ways can be uncertain, whether it be because of the loss of job for one of their parents or the loss of health for someone in their family. A lot of UGA students are in harm's way right now in a way that they haven't been before. This is true in any year at any time, but maybe even more so because of the COVID-19 situation. So the Student Emergency Fund you have a chance to support offers great help to those UGA students. In addition to that, your donation to the UGA Alumni Association also goes to support the research being done by UGA scientists as we seek a therapeutic or a vaccine for the coronavirus that's obviously in the news all the time now. UGA scientists are also in the news as well with some tremendous breakthroughs heading towards some really good news in our battle against the coronavirus. But as you know, it takes money to support the work that researchers are doing, and that's what the UGA Alumni Association provides. Through the UGA Alumni Association, you also become a mentor as well, because for Georgia students about to graduate, they step into, as you know, a very uncertain job market right now. So by becoming a mentor, by using your expertise, your learned experience, you get a chance to instill that in the next generation of UGA graduates. What could be better than that? Also, so many of you are on your own front lines, battling in your own way against the coronavirus, and certainly the UGA Alumni Association would love to hear from you on that. So please let me give you a website to go to tell your story, to get involved in other people's stories, and really continue to ensure the University of Georgia is at the forefront of the work being done to make the world a better place in kind of a post-COVID-19 world. So here's the website. It's alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. Let me read that again, and obviously, for those of you watching on video, you can see it on your screen. alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. Support the work that the UGA Alumni Association is doing. Find out more at dognation.com on that as well. All right, Jeff, let me kind of keep the draft talk as it relates to Georgia going. And let me point this out about the reigning national champions, LSU. A lot has been said that LSU had 14 players selected in this year's draft, and that's true, they did. However, I think more significant than that is they had 10 selected in the first three rounds on either Thursday and Friday. Jeff, if you want to look at something, and it's not a perfect science because, you know, it's not necessarily an apples-to-apples comparison, but if you really want Georgia to achieve at the highest possible level this upcoming season, as Michael Jordan said on the Last Dance documentary, there may not be any kind of I in team, but there is an I in win. Individual performances added together are what championships seem to be built on. I think that you need to see more top-end performances from Georgia in the draft. More development that turns a guy that's sort of drafted on a Saturday and put that guy to Friday. A guy that's drafted on a Friday, find a way to get him into that first round. I think if you're looking for Georgia to sort of break through that championship ceiling, this is one of those lagging indicators of the fact that was really happening. The guys who are draftable become Thursday, Friday picks the way that LSU was able to produce that this year. If Georgia's going to win a championship, it'll be demonstrated, I believe, by the elite talent that sort of moves from the back end of the draft or the undrafted free agent ranks and sort of moves those guys towards earlier in the week on a Thursday or a Friday. For LSU, that turned out to be quite predictive, and I think the same thing will be true for Georgia if it's ready to break through this upcoming season.
Yeah, Brandon, that's a good topic. There's a lot of meat on that bone. I guess when we bring that up, a few things go through my mind's eye. I guess, number one, I think that you got to look at development, and also let's just say hot sauce that Joe Brady and LSU's offense put on a lot of those guys. Frankly, I think a lot of folks forget that Joe Burrow threw for 16 touchdowns and 5 interceptions in his junior season. I think he threw for 54 or something astronomical, ginormous in his senior year at LSU. I think that enhanced the draft stock of Justin Jefferson. I think it enhanced the draft stock of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I think the thing you got to look at with Georgia is they're having pockets of good stuff. You see the inside linebacker one year. You see the outside linebackers another year. You see the offensive linemen this year. Georgia does this, though, without wide receivers. You had one running back. You just don't get a smattering. I think one of the best stats out of that LSU 14 number that's being, you know, bantered about right now was they had someone selected at every position, Brandon.
That's great. Great stat.
That's a great stat. And, you know, there's a debate here for somebody to make. And everybody wants to talk about quote-unquote developing. You look at Georgia in the Kirby Smart era, and this is simply what the NFL guys are saying. The NFL has said Georgia has suited up a fourth-round quarterback and a fifth-round quarterback so far in the program. So for a lot of people wondering how much better did Jake Fromm get, how much did he develop from freshman to sophomore to junior year, you've got a Georgia offense, at least in the NFL's cold, calculating, sometimes unforgiving eye, that Georgia hasn't had a premier quarterback yet. A fifth-round talent, a fourth-round talent, and that's what Georgia has. It waits to be seen where Justin Fields will be drafted. But I'm sure there's somebody with a blog and a hot take and a chisel little clickbait type game to their reporting that wonders, maybe Georgia's gotten as much as it could out of the quarterback position so far between the hedges and Athens.
So no one's talked about what he wants to see from the offense in the future more than I have. That's been a big issue. However, on the show anyway. However, on the subject of the draft stuff, I think there's something else that kind of quietly goes below the surface here. Because while you want to see more dazzling performance from the offense, and I think you're right, Joe Brady at LSU, I believe, greatly enhanced the draft prospects of not just Joe Burrow, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire, other guys in that program. They benefited from being a part of the Brady offense, even though Edwards-Helaire's case, Brady was the passing game coordinator. The better passing game opened up a great opportunity for the running back, and his stats from one year to the next certainly proved that. But Jeff, here's where what's kind of quietly hidden below the surface for Georgia, which is the need to sort of improve the sort of top end performance of your front seven guys. You know, if you look at who are the defensive guys right now from Georgia to potentially be projected as first round picks next year, I've seen the name Tyson Campbell come up. I believe Sporting News had him. I've seen the name Richard LeCount come up. I've seen him in a couple different places. Once again, you're kind of talking about those secondary guys being the best players in the Georgia defense, the same way that J.R. Reed kind of was a year ago as an All-American, way that DeAndre Baker was in 2018 as a Thorpe Award winner. But you really want to see that breakthrough occur with linebackers, more than just one Roquan Smith in 2017, but multiple linebackers kind of taking that step up towards being kind of a Thursday or a Friday pick. And certainly the defensive line drought for Georgia in terms of linemen getting drafted, that needs to end. No one's going to say that Georgia hasn't been a very good defense the last couple of years. The stats obviously bear that out. But to go from being very good to national champion means that I think you see these individual performances really, really pop in terms of what your front seven, your linebacker, your defensive line does. That to me is almost as significant an issue as what still needs to happen with the Georgia offense.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to, it's almost how sometimes we watch and like we wonder, I think the narrative hits the recruiting world first, Brandon, where folks wonder what's going on with the defensive linemen, what's going on with the elite defensive tackles. And remember, Georgia had a history of losing out on names like Rick Sandage. I go back to Aubrey Solomon. Marvin Wilson is another name that comes to mind. Well, when they don't get those elite guys in the 2016 and 2017 classes, remember, Brandon, that 2016 class had Julian Rochester, Mikhail Carter, Tyler Clark, a bunch of names that Georgia reeled in, and they were considered among the top 10, 15 players, 20 players in the country. And then they don't, and everybody wonders, where's the elite guys at the college level on Saturday? You mentioned Jordan Davis as a three-star exception, but the last couple of classes, you've seen Jalen Carter, you've seen Trayvon Walker. Those are guys that you're going to see eventually on those high mock drafts and mock draft boards because they're coming in, as the recruiting industry does, a very good job. I think the numbers play out, Brandon, that dialing it all in, everybody's getting a lot better about figuring out who are the elite guys. The hit rate on a lot of those guys are a lot closer. I think the defensive line are where people look at in terms of what separates the SEC from everyone else. I just think, man, when you look at all this stuff going on, you got to wonder, and I'd be curious to get your response on this, Brandon. Georgia fans would love to celebrate winning the last game. They would love to tout that long, long-awaited national championship. But I think high school players – they're going to wonder about that national championship, and they're going to appreciate it because you can say you can get it done there. But I believe that number, like the LSU 14 and getting guys picked and getting guys drafted, or even seeing Andrew Thomas go number four overall. And I think Andrew Thomas, Brandon, is the highest selected lineman in the history of the University of Georgia football program right now.
Yeah.
you got to believe that sort of thing is going to go a long way with these young men. You got to look up Frankie Sinkwich, Charlie Trippi, Harry Edwards way back in the 40s and 50s. And then you got to go, you got to go Matthew Stafford in 2009. And those are the only guys that, and Garrison Hurst in 1993, those are the only guys ever in the history of the University of Georgia that have been picked higher than Andrew Thomas. And that's quite a feat, and that's quite an impressive statement to make. And I think a lot of these players and a lot of this talent, it's kind of, I'm kind of linking in my thoughts here that young guys, the best young guys want to go where they can be developed and make the league. And I know a lot of people say championships, and that's definitely important. But when you look at the big smiling faces on Isaiah Wilson and the big smiling faces on Andrew Thomas, I don't think a lot of those Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilsons of today are looking at those guys and seeing them in the moment and thinking about second and 26 and never winning a national championship at Georgia. I think they're thinking mission accomplished, playing the game they love, making brotherhood relationships for the rest of their lives, and being able to set their family ahead for generations.
Yeah, but here's what I think the good thing, though, is, and for whatever reason, I can't tell you why this is true, but it seems to be true. Football is a sport, like, say, in comparison to basketball, which is different, where it does seem like team success is aligned with individual success even more. You mentioned Thomas and Wilson. They obviously accomplished their goal at Georgia, which was to get drafted in the first round, especially Andrew Thomas' case. My gosh, he's got robber baron money after going number four overall. But the issue for Georgia was they didn't have enough of the guys like Thomas and Wilson who kind of worked their way to the first round to win a national championship. Compare this to, like, say, John Calipari at Kentucky or somewhere like that, where draft success and winning national championships, for whatever reason, don't seem to align quite as closely. In the world of college football, the programs that are producing the lion's share of the first-round picks, seemingly, are programs like Alabama and Ohio State, which hasn't won since 2014. I realize, but has won the playoff era. Clemson, now LSU. For the most part, a huge number of first-round picks has pretty well coincided with winning national championships.
Yeah, just being on great teams. But, Brandon, you go back to the point on the defensive line, and I'm trying to think as I was making my answer here. I can only think of – Brandon, I think there's only – when you think about a true defensive tackle, I can only think of about four names. That's Kinlaw and Brown in the first round.
Yeah.
Those were the only two first-round defensive tackles. And I think it was Blacklock out of TCU, and then I think it was Raquan Davis out of Alabama. Brandon, out of those 64 picks, you only had four defensive tackles. So it's not like the whole world is hoarding those guys. And you look at a lot of those cases, Javon Kinlaw and Derrick Brown, those guys, as far as their eligibility track goes, they could have been a guy that could have left for the previous draft in the 2019 draft. They were so highly sought and coveted. They just returned for their senior seasons. And I think that's what turned Derrick Brown from a number 15, 18, 17, 14 pick into a top 10 and almost a top five pick.
I mean, Brown. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Brown is kind of the epitome. When you look at him, he was already good enough. And let's face it, everybody loves Jordan Davis, what he means. You know, Jordan Davis still wasn't a full-time starter for Georgia last year. And as good as Jordan Davis has been for Georgia, he hasn't been Derrick Brown for Auburn at Georgia. And there's a clear difference between a guy like Derrick Brown, even year two, and what you saw out of Jordan Davis in year two. And I think, you know, there are names in the 2021 class we could throw out here as well of guys that would kind of fit that mold. I believe that elite defensive tackle guy, Brandon, as much as folks want to say developed, I think you have to have a lot of the groceries coming in. See a Trayvon Walker, see a Jalen Carter. I think Javon Kinlaw of South Carolina also comes to mind. Those guys have to be impressive once they get on campus, and then you got to elevate those guys from there.
Let me just finish with a recruiting thing. I want you to give me an overarching thing on Georgia because we haven't talked much recruiting. Also, how much fun did you have with the Florida staffer seemingly whining about Kamar Wilcoxon's pledge to Tennessee after at one point in time being a part of the Florida class? Jeff, for the people who don't know about this, so the Florida staffer, one of their player personnel guys or whatever you call that, has like the "Is this your final answer?" Regis Philbin tweet. Of course, on video, folks can see this for themselves. This is so unbecoming. This is so low rent. This is as Florida as it gets. If you're going to whine about decommitments, then college football at the SEC level is not for you. It's full contact. You're going to get your feelings hurt. And if that's the kind of thing that you're going to whine about, then you got to go play in a different league. You got to go play in a different league. You got to go play in a different sandbox, because nobody around here is going to think twice about throwing elbows. So I think it's really funny on the Wilcoxon pledge to Tennessee. So I guess give me a thought about that, and then just give me a little bit of what's next for Georgia.
Well, first of all, Brandon, if we were in the T-shirt business, if we were in the T-shirt business, I think we could have get a bearded man yelling from that Robert Redford line. And the line underneath it would be, this is as Florida as it gets. I liked that one. That was a new one for you. I don't know if Eddie Ghost wrote that one for you or not. But, you know, Wilcoxon is an interesting story because he's from Georgia. I know the young man a little bit. I've been around him. And this guy, he's only a top 275 overall player, Brandon. You think all this consternation, let me use that word that my granddaddy used to say a lot, all this consternation about a four-star safety DB hybrid who has decommitted and committed to Florida twice. Obviously, that's not a very good look, but if you have to lose your grits a little bit about a prospect and wavering, and you got to look like that sly fox on social media, I don't think a prospect of this stature, if you're getting heated and you're busting that mind blown emoji over a player like this, that's just not a very good look, and it just doesn't bode well for how you get into the realm of the big boy recruiting with the elite players and everything else. So that's a good one, Brandon. That's as Florida as it gets.
A little bit of recruiting momentum for Tennessee as of late as well. They get Wilcoxon. They get the five-star out of Alabama, really taking him from the big boys, Alabama, LSU, others. A little bit of momentum for Pruitt at the moment?
Yeah, well, man, I kind of saw this coming. When you look at who they've got there now with Jeremy Pruitt, they've got Niedermeyer, their tight ends coach, who's probably their ace recruiter. They've got Derek Ansley as well, Brandon, on the other side of the ball. They've got some hyped up black belt ninja recruiters of their own on that side. And, you know, going to Alabama and get a five-star pass rusher, you got to remember, Brandon, though, Tennessee's been doing this a little bit. When you look at Trey Smith, you look at Quavarius Crouch, they just re-recruited Cade Mays. I'm just going to let that one just move through the universe right there, back to the campus. I mean, they've been able to get a five-star here under Jeremy Pruitt's tenure. And that's a school that's going to be able to recruit. And I think, to me, it's fascinating, Brandon, because whoever's going to wind up as the second team in the SEC East in the next season, whether it's Tennessee, Florida, or South Carolina, that's going to be good for them. And how close they get to Georgia will be interesting. But those guys that don't wind up as the second dog in the SEC East, that seat's going to get a lot harder.
Hey, Jeff, good stuff from you. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today. I know you've got Before the Hedges presented by Kroger coming up on Wednesday. Some more really good look backs to the draft at DogNation.com. Looks ahead for recruiting as well. So we'll enjoy all that content from you, and we'll catch up with you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG, very soon as well.
Hey, Brandon, I got one plug for everybody out there today. If you haven't, listen to this. I want you to join the Dog Nation Forum. We're going to try and kick off a membership drive for new members of the forum. Oh. What better time to join the forum? And when you join the forum, folks, you got to have a mini essay. Now, I'm not talking about the Gettysburg Address or anything like that, but I'm talking about a really short paragraph about why you'd like to be a part of the Dog Nation Forum. We're going to start it up soon. And the person that gives us the best stumping speech to why they would be a good member of the Dog Nation Forum, we're going to get one of those coveted, elusive Dog Nation swag boxes.
Wow.
I don't think we'll have Eddie the Blind Squirrel in there, but I think we'll have one of those Dog Nation polos. We might have a hat or two. We might have some good stuff in there for you. So if you haven't joined the Dog Nation Forum yet, be watching for our contest coming up, and we'll try to get you linked up with the Dog Nation Forum message board.
That sounds great, Jeff. Thanks for being with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We will look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, man. Have a good week, Brandon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really, really good stuff from Jeff Sintel. Always appreciate him being a part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Appreciate y'all being a part of it as well. And, of course, you can still join us on video every single day. We're live on both Facebook and YouTube starting at 10 a.m. We'll do our R.S. Andrews cool down there, give you a chance to weigh in, share your thoughts on Georgia football. It's brought to you by our friends at R.S. Andrews. Air conditioning, heating, plumbing, electric, all those systems in your house, R.S. Andrews has dedicated the whole staff there, their lives, to learning how they work and fixing yours when it's broken. That's why story after story, they've been delivering smiles. Air conditioning goes out, they can get it fixed for you. Water heater goes out. Many cases, they can replace it for you in the same day. Darian, the whole team over there, do great work. Find them online at rsandrews.com.
All right, so I told you about this story before. So Kamar Wilcoxon, former Florida commit, actually, I guess two-time Florida commit, decommitted both times, obviously, and is now committed to Tennessee. And yesterday, a Florida staffer, and I don't know his name, although I think I've seen him involved in some of these social media back and forths before. Not a great look for him. But he gave you the Regis Philbin from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and is that your final answer? Essentially insinuating that Wilcoxon had changed his mind before. First of all, timely reference, bringing up Regis Philbin for a 17 or 18-year-old. I'm sure that really smacks right square in the middle of that demographic, bringing up a ABC game show from 20-something years ago and a host who's, you know, not exactly top of mind for the youth of America here today. But nonetheless, my real take on this is this, and this is like the most kind, I guess, advice I can offer. If you're a Florida staffer, someone on like the player personnel side or whatever else, obviously you're a part of the recruiting process there, and you're going to get your feelings hurt over decommitments, the SEC is just not the place for you. I mean, this is like the most Florida thing I've ever seen because of the way that Dan Mullen kind of runs that program, where, you know, other programs, when they get a decommitment, Georgia included, you know, Georgia's lost some recruiting battles. Some guys that it wanted either left the program or chose to go to a different school at the very onset as opposed to Georgia. What do? You roll up your sleeves, you get back to work, and you go find a player that you hope can be better. You don't pout and turn to the recruit and say, I thought you promised. I thought you were coming here. Recruits have every right and every freedom to change their minds. It's an awful look for Florida. Wilcoxon at one point in time responded back to this in kind of a negative way, which is absolutely his right. I think he may have since deleted that tweet. But nonetheless, some recruiting momentum here for Tennessee. We talked about the five-star defensive end they got out of Alabama. Now you add Wilcoxon here, the former Gator. Commit a little bit of recruiting momentum for Jeremy Pruitt thus far. You got to give him some credit for that. Steve Ensminger, LSU offensive coordinator, was speaking about offensive changes to LSU. Now that Joe Brady, last year's passing game coordinator, has moved on to Carolina. And Ensminger has said that they expect no changes, but for the changes they do make will only be changes for the better, which is, I guess, what else is he supposed to say? I do think it's really interesting, though, in this sort of age of spin control that we live in. Have you noticed this? That no one has tried to spin Steve Ensminger remaining, Joe Brady gone. No one has said, leaked to the media, favorable reporter trying to curry favor with Ed Orgeron. No one has said Steve Ensminger didn't get enough credit for this offense last year. If you can find that written or published anywhere, I'd love to read it. Pretty much everyone seemingly is acknowledging by omission, if nothing else, that Joe Brady was the straw that stirred the drink for the LSU offense a year ago. Ensminger is still there. Scott Linehan, by the way, has been brought in to replace Brady. Linehan, a former NFL head coach. But it's really interesting that in a day and age when everything gets spun, really no one is spinning Joe Brady's absence from LSU. This is a guy the Tigers tried to keep, not able to, and replacing him is not going to be easy. By the way, one more SEC through story here. Thought this was funny from Tennessee. So five people broke into Neyland Stadium, stole about $600 worth of beer and alcohol. What's amazing, though, is I guess two of them have already been captured by Knoxville police. Now, if you follow this SEC news on a regular basis, somebody seemingly breaks into Tiger Stadium at LSU like every other week. That stadium, for whatever reason, doesn't have locks on its doors or something. People are breaking that place all the time, and to my knowledge, none of them ever get caught. They just get kind of captured on video or whatever. But Knoxville has already sort of, you know, found two of the people that broke into Neyland Stadium. By the way, if you want some beer, which during this quarantine time, plenty of good reasons to assume that you do, but if you want some, there are a lot of easier ways to get it than breaking into Neyland Stadium. But I guess good job by the Knoxville police. You know, Kane, the former WWE wrestler, is the mayor there. Apparently he's running a pretty tight ship when it comes to his police department. We'll make that your SEC through. And by the way, one more thing to mention as we're wrapping up here today. Now, take these kind of reports with a grain of salt, because this is like a New Jersey news outlet reporting this, meaning the leak on this or the source on this, almost certainly the Giants themselves. But a report coming out of the New York area has Andrew Thomas, who was selected number 4 overall by the New York Giants, as being the number 1 rated tackle on up to 8 other teams' board with the NFL draft. And that's the Giants' way of saying, here's why we could not trade down in this draft, because if we did, there was a very good chance we would not have gotten Andrew Thomas. You had to stay there at 4 if you wanted to get him, according to the New York Giants. Now, as I said before, the Giants have a motivation for wanting to spin it that way, but pretty good credit to what Thomas is and viewed as, and he's kind of always been thought of that way, a guy who you could really feel good about putting your trust in, and I'm sure he'll play for a long time in the New York Giants. Gator Hitter Updater, 1,277 days. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG.